the pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
And welcome in to second hour. It's been a busy show, a lot happening in many different areas, and we're always excited to say hello to Matt Brown here in a minute. His latest involves something many, many people are talking about, and that's EA Sports announcing the summer release next year. First college game in over 10 years. Matt is the publisher of Extra Points, and hardly anyone knows more about the inner workings of college athletics than him. Matt, thank you. Great to see you. Appreciate it. Let's start with EA, because yesterday when the teaser came out, a lot of tongues were wagging. Explain to those who don't swim in EA circles, and nobody has done it for a long time, why this is such a big deal.
Yeah, Paul, I'd say this is a big deal for a couple of different reasons. It's a major deal as a sports business story because for so many institutions, this is a level of marketing that they simply can't buy anywhere else. Everybody is concerned on some level about being able to reach a younger generation of fans, people that might not consume media or even college football itself the same way that my generation or generations older than I am have. And video games are a great way to reach those people. So within the industry itself, there's a lot of excitement about this game. There's a lot of excitement for nostalgia reasons. We haven't had this for a decade. If you're somebody in your, anywhere, I think from your late 20s to early 40s, this might have been a foundational part of your middle school, your high school, your college experience. Now you get a chance to have that back. And I also think, given that, you know, the last couple of conversations we've had, Paul, we're usually here talking about antitrust litigation or labor law or these gigantic existential questions in college athletics. And the thing about a PlayStation game is it allows the player to turn all that other stuff off for a second and just engage with the game on the field. And we have to talk about the other things because that shapes the existence of the sport that we cover. But I do think that there's something to the idea that there are some fans that just want to tune that other stuff out, and video games are a potential way for them to do that. Now they're going to get another opportunity to do that in a few months.
Matt, I'm sure a lot of people know what happened to EA and all the legal issues, but for those who don't remember, why did it stop? Where did it go?
Right. Well, if you played any of the last couple of releases of the college football series, those games did not pay and did not actually use the name, image, and likeness of current players. If you fired up a game during the Tim Tebow Florida era, Tim Tebow's name isn't anywhere on the game, but there's going to be a fella that looks a lot like Tim Tebow, that plays football a lot like Tim Tebow, who's playing quarterback for the Gators. There was a famous lawsuit brought by former UCLA basketball star Ed O'Bannon that pointed out that, boy, it sure seems like it ought to be illegal for someone to use my name, image, or likeness in a digital video game and not pay me for it. EA ended up paying out settlements to individuals that were part of some of these games that weren't compensated. And then they said, well, we'd be happy paying everybody. But the NCAA said, no, if we pay you to be in a video game, then we are breaking the sacred tenets of amateurism. We won't license our individual school IP to be a part of it. So the game went away for a while. Now we have new video game systems that have reached maturity. You know, more people are able to have those. We have a legal system that allows EA to compensate the athletes for being a part of this game. And schools are excited to share that intellectual property and be a part of a joint venture now. And the time's right to be able to bring those projects back.
Matt, 2 weeks ago today, we led this program talking about the big announcement from the Southeastern Conference and the Big Ten. We were able to talk to Greg Sankey a couple of days later. He explained it now. Tony Petitti has given some clarification. From your perch, what does this mean? And describe the significance of these two mega leagues coming together.
Yeah, I understand the significance of Big Ten and SEC administrators, you know, breaking bread and not being openly hostile to each other, because if you've been following college sports for a while, that historically hasn't been the case. You know, the Delaney's Big Ten often defined itself not just for what the Big Ten was, but defined itself as not being the SEC. You know, not being SEC was part of a shared identity for many Midwestern flagship institutions. So to see that kind of Cold War thawing a little bit, I certainly think that's important. But when we hear about working groups between administrators to talk about changes in athlete compensation, changes in governance, changes in reforming college athletics, I don't mean to be disrespectful to the smart people working at the SEC or the Big Ten, but for me, I don't think that that's terribly important simply because fundamentally those individuals are no longer in charge. You know, whatever proposal that, if any proposal comes from these Big Ten SEC conversations about how to structure college athletics to be legally compliant, that depends on the courts finding that to be okay. It's the courts right now, whether that's district court or the National Labor Relations Board, administrative courts or other places, or potentially Congress, that are saying what athletes should be employees, if any, and what are systems here that could comply with antitrust law. The administrators should come up with good ideas. They should talk. I think that's a positive, but fundamentally, they don't have the final say anymore. And I'm more interested in the people that do, which are folks in Washington, D.C. and in courthouses across the country.
And on that subject, it was a couple of weeks ago when all of a sudden it came out that Tennessee was going after the NCAA. We really had not even been made aware of an official investigation, and the Chancellor, Don Day Plowman, literally went scorched earth, and a couple of attorney generals followed suit. It's a little confusing watching this minute to minute, but where are you on what this means and really how we got to this point?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting case to look at from afar, because it shows that really going after the NCAA pinata is increasingly smart politics for AGs or for governors or for lawmakers. And you're not really going to be accused as much of favoring one state university or one private school over another. One of the few things that really unites conservatives and progressives in this country right now is that they don't like the NCAA. We saw this, you know, a few weeks prior to even the Tennessee-Virginia case with attorneys general of blue states like Illinois and Colorado and very red states like West Virginia joining together to sue over transfer restrictions, right? And so I think it's notable to watch this as just as what this means for politics to see these states jump into this world. What we're increasingly finding, whether Tennessee or the NCAA prevails in this particular case, it surely won't be the last one, about whether the NCAA has the capacity to enforce nearly any rule about not just NIL, but I think increasingly about academics, increasingly about anything related to amateurism, because there's going to be a political incentive for somebody to go find a local judge and take them to court over it. That's why the NCAA has spent so much effort in Capitol Hill to try to get antitrust exemptions. That's why the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the ACC have tried to do the same. And I think, I look part of this and think, it's great that administrators are talking. I've written in my publication, now is the time for a sea of white papers. Let's hear everybody's best idea. Now is the time for that. I mean, the time was really 5-6 years ago, but now is the next best time. But fundamentally, it's other people that might not follow or understand this industry as closely as the practitioners do, that are really going to have an outsized role in shaping what the future looks like.
Now, we'll spare everybody the usual Washington, D.C. inside the Beltway jokes. All you have to do is put on your favorite cable network and start laughing. Yeah. But is anything going to get done any time in the foreseeable future on these issues?
You know, I tell everybody that if I had a perfectly working crystal ball, my newsletter would cost a lot more than $8. So I can only look at this as foggy as I possibly can. But it doesn't look good. And if anything, I think it looks worse than it did a few months ago. Wow. Not that there aren't lawmakers who are both Republicans and Democrats who are interested in finding some kind of consensus about athlete health care or about some very general name, image, and likeness regulations here. The challenge right now, the biggest one, is the calendar. We have a presidential election coming in a couple of months. There's the ability to control various House subcommittees and who's going to actually be around to vote because we're off campaigning or we're off doing other things. We've just run out of time. I differ from many of my national media colleagues in that. I think there really was a potential for some legislative action. It's just that the NCAA and power conferences were asking for the wrong things at the wrong time from the wrong people. And now if you really want something to get done, I think that's more likely to happen after the presidential election and after we know who's going to be in Congress moving forward than now.
you always hear the phrase, you know, I don't want to get into politics, but I have to get into politics to ask this next question. Yeah. It's a pretty obvious question. Between the two candidates, or as when you broaden it among the houses of Congress, being Republican or Democrat, which one favors something getting done more?
Yeah, it's actually, I think, a really fascinating question, because the politics around college sports are not so completely neatly R&D as maybe many other issues. I think it's fair to say that, very broadly speaking, Democrats are more likely to support college athlete legislation that is broader in scope, meaning that it goes after not just NIL and not just potentially the NCAA's ability to enforce rules, but also about protecting labor organizing, not just for college athletes, but potentially for other industries in the South. They're more likely to look at holistic health care or other athlete rights issues, whereas Republicans, broadly speaking, are more likely to be sympathetic to some of the NCAA's arguments and want for much narrower legislation regarding NIL or anything else. The really key issue at this point, even more of a name, image, and likeness, is about employment. Because between Dartmouth and the National Labor Relations Board Regional Office, USC and the NLRB, potentially Johnson v. NCAA, and potentially other cases after that, there's going to be continuous pressure from outside groups or courts to define at least some, and potentially a whole lot, of college athletes as employees. And that's something that many Democrats welcome, at least for some parts of college athletics. And that's something that Republicans generally are more wary of. So if you were hoping for action that lines up more with what the NCAA wants, broadly speaking, I think you would want Republican control of the House and Senate. And if you were looking for something a little bit more pro-athlete labor or more expansive, you're probably looking for more leadership from Democrats.
I'm still confused about the election, but you've helped me immensely on trying to handicap it from a sports standpoint. Great to have you on, Matt. Nobody does it better. We really appreciate your time.
Paul, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you. Matt Brown joining us from Extra Points. We are going to run to the break here with your phone calls around the corner. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back. Emma starts it off for us. Hello, Emma.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
We are doing great, thank you.
I'm from Grand Alabama, home of the Patriots.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Glad to hear from you.
And I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thank you. What do you think? What's on your mind today?
Is Nick Saban taking Corso's place?
Not exactly. I think, Emma, that Corso is going to remain on the show according to the show's producers. Nick Saban will be there for his expert analysis, not for his ability to put a mascot's head on his shoulders. Thanks for the call. Trey is up next.
Hey, Paul, two things today, and then I want to give you the answer to my trivia question. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
That was a great phone call by Jim. A lot of credit to Jim today. But he said something Tuesday. I want to know how this is possible. He said he never listens to Squirrel because everything he says is a lie. Well, if you don't listen to him, how do you know what he's saying is a lie?
That's a really good point.
I mean, he did say it, so I was just asking. And I want to tell you something. The guy that's the big Georgia fan, the interview you had, you know what he reminds me of, Paul? He reminds me of a little schoolboy that's kind of whining and begging for your approval on everything he says. It's just, I don't know how to explain it, but he just seems kind of whiny to me.
Here's what, Paul, you know, I agree with you. The problem with Griff, and I don't mind his opinions, what I do mind is the disingenuous road to his opinions.
Oh, I agree, but it's just, I don't know. It just don't come over well to me. And he hardly ever talks about Georgia. But, Paul, the answer to the trivia question about if you're fouled shooting a three-point shot at the wrong basket and the ball goes in.
Okay.
Whenever you shoot the ball at the wrong basket, it's not considered a try or a shot. But it does count if it goes in. Since it's not considered a try, it don't count as a three. It counts as a two.
Ooh.
So, therefore, you're not considered as in the act of shooting.
Okay.
So then you have to go back and look and see if that is the seventh team foul to put you in 1-1, or if it's the 10th team foul and puts you in the double bonus. And if it's not, you just bring the ball on the sidelines. If it is, you shoot the free throws accordingly. That's how the rule
goes. Well, that's good. Because you know what? I could not sleep last night trying to figure out what the answer to that was.
Yeah, I'm sure. You have a great weekend, my friend. Y'all take care.
You bet, Trey. Trey was definitely an official in his former life. Richard in Montgomery, Alabama is up next.
Hey, Paul. I'm the guy that called last year about trying to hook up my man with a exorcist. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, I do
call.
Remember that. Yeah, I've had a lot of priests who called me about that.
I'm sorry. Anyway, Grip might use the same guy if I ever find him again. But what I wanted to say, I happen to be a fan of Tommy Rees, which I never thought I would be until about halfway through the season when Milroe had an interview and said that he felt like Tommy Rees had really developed him and a lot of the offensive players. And I guess one of my hindsight 2020 questions happens to be how – could he have saved some of these players that perhaps have left at this point? And, you know, could he have helped develop the team? You know, this would have been his third year as an offensive coordinator. And he did have the pleasure of working a full year under Saban. And I just feel like he would have been a great coach if he had just hung in there a little bit. Ryan Grubbs, was, you know, supposed to get the job when Saban was still there a long time, you know, a year ago. And Rees was probably the second or third choice. But I just feel like had he stayed on with the team, looking back on it, compared to what we have now, you know, I've been a fan for 60 years. I started back in the Joe Namath days. And I just feel like, looking back on it, I think he would have been at least – he did 10-2 his first year. I mean, lost two games his, you know, first year in the SEC. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, Richard
– what do you think?
Yeah, I mean –
you don't like him.
Well, no, I really don't, but you may be right. The problem is that when a new coach comes in, he usually brings his guy. And this is why it's so unfortunate for Alabama – that his guy was obviously Ryan Grubb. He showed up and then he left. By the time all that happened, Rees was gone, took a pro job with the Cleveland Browns, and the ship had sailed. And I don't know if Reese could have. I mean, he may have been able to. I mean, certainly Jalen Milroe would have been better off, I think, because he was used to a coordinator. I agree with you completely on that.
Okay, well, I just want to say, like I said, I'm not a Notre Dame fan and I'm not a Tommy Reese fan, but I sure was a fan after halfway through the season. He seemed
in fairness to Tommy Reese, I did think he was clueless early on, but he did help Alabama get in position. And one thing, I remember Saban telling me this several different times during the year when we saw him, that he really believed in Tommy Reese. Now, he knows a lot more about it than I do. I mean, I'm sitting up from a distance, but I appreciate your call very much. Thank you. Let's check in next with Don in South Carolina. Hello, Don.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, I really enjoy your show. I've been listening for years, and I'm calling in response to the Griffith interview today.
Yeah.
As a Georgia Bulldog fan, I was really surprised at his comments, and I don't agree with much of it. But I will say this. Georgia is not looking forward to Texas. Georgia is not looking forward to Alabama. Georgia is concentrating on Clemson. And anyone that thinks Georgia is not taking everybody serious hasn't been paying much attention to college football. So that's about all I've got to say today, and go Bulldog.
Well, thank you. Yeah, let me recap. I realize some of you maybe just be getting out of work or getting home or wherever you're getting us. Mike Griffith was here over an hour ago. He said a couple of things because listening to Griffith, you don't always – it makes you want to go crazy sometimes. But essentially he said that Georgia and Texas are – Georgia than Texas is in the upper echelon of the SEC. And he said Alabama's in the next tier with endless number of schools. He said Georgia is really looking forward to that game in Texas, blowing right past the Alabama game on September 28th. And this was the thing that really blew us all away. He essentially said, I'm doing some interpretation here, but he essentially said he thinks Nick Saban will come back to coach Alabama because, in his mind, DeBoer is a short-timer and that Saban, 2 to 3 years after being on TV, will come back and take over the program. We will take a short break on that note. Yes, it is Friday afternoon, and it's almost 5 o'clock where we are, if you know what I mean.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back. Ted is up next. Good afternoon, Ted.
Good afternoon, Paul. I'd like to say a few things about the Mike Griffin hit piece.
Yes.
Okay. He said Seattle was insinuating that Alabama was tricking the players.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Until the portal closed. But that had to be untrue because Seattle didn't even have their head coach yet until after the portal closed. And the way I'm thinking, you don't hire an offensive coordinator before you hire a head coach. And by him making that statement, he's trying to fuel distrust between the players towards the coaching staff. And as far as the Saban comment and Saban coming back, he's putting it in the fans' minds and heads that if we don't back Coach DeBoer and his staff, he'll leave and Coach Saban will come back, which is not going to happen. And one last thing, I won't take too much longer, but he mentions Alabama losing two assistants. Well, actually, Tennessee lost an assistant. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Texas, and Florida, they all lost assistants to the NFL too. Missouri lost an assistant to LSU. Auburn lost a couple of assistants. And Ole Griff forgot to mention, conveniently, that Georgia lost two assistants this week. That's basically all I wanted to say about the hit piece. And thank you for listening to my call.
Appreciate your call. Mo, what you got, Mo? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Goodtree.
Thank you.
I believe that's the correct translation.
That is exactly the translation. You are correct.
I heard you talk, I believe, last month about that. That's a good name.
I'm sticking with it.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about all these other fans commenting on Alabama. You would think that we created the world the way they're always talking about us. They never talk much about their teams. It's mostly about Alabama, what Alabama does. They're concerned and consumed with Alabama.
Well, it's been like that a long time. Not much has changed in college football.
Well, I'd like to tell you a short story. There was a sportscaster up in the Midwest who was a baseball commentator for 40 years. He retired, and the people were calling in and telling how much they loved him and what a good sportscaster he was. Now, back in those days, smoking was not a sin. People smoked all the time. The coaches smoked. The commentators smoked. I saw Jim Leland smoking a cigarette in a Pittsburgh Pirates dugout. But anyway, people were calling in and saying how much they appreciated him. A lady called in and said, "I loved the way you did, the way you commentated, but you smoked too much." And the guy said, "Ma'am, my granddaddy lived to be 99 years old." And she said, "Well, did he smoke?" He said, "No, he minded his own damn business." Have a nice day.
I like that. Thank you for the call. Mic drop. Elliot, Ohio, next.
Paul, you can never count Alabama out. They still got Jalen Milroe, who has that long ball, can get past the secondary, but that's not why I called. I called to find out who the heck is doing your brackets. Is it influence from ESPN? Because how can John from St. Louis and Elliot from Ohio be on the bubble while what's the space from Columbus, Ohio is in? He didn't even call you for Valentine's Day. When's the last time he called you, Paul? Jeff.
Well, we had to decide, call or no call, who was the best Ohio caller.
He may not even be alive. We don't even know. He might be DQ based on not reading right now. We don't know because we don't hear from him.
Well, okay. Jeff, well, Elliot, the person in charge is in the other room right now listening to your call.
So Randy!
By the way, it is not Randy. Randy is not involved in the...
Oh, it's ESPN.
It's one of the ESPN suits.
It's that ESPN influence that's been killing all of our brackets way back to the beginning of time, favoring Columbus, Ohio. So I don't get that.
By the way, Randy, unless you would like to be involved in the bracketology, Randy wants nothing to do with it. So Elliot, make a case why you are such a good caller, because I haven't heard anything yet. Yeah.
Because I stand by my team. Isn't that number one trait of a Feinbaum caller? They stand by their team. Number two trait of a Feinbaum caller, they call in even when their team's losing. Number three trait of a Feinbaum caller, we have great stats and we have great takeaways that other people comment on. I'll have to come up with some more.
Wow, these are compelling, Elliot. Elliot, you started off on the bubble. You're no longer even eligible after this call.
Goes the other way, Paul. Don't take me off the bubble. Put me in.
Okay. We want you to be in. No, seriously. You will get in the tournament.
All right.
You have my word on that.
Oh, okay. I got Paul Feinbaum's
word. You may have to play a play-in game to get in the play-in game, but you'll be in there.
I'll be in there. Hey, if Bash can do a...
Would you accept an NIT invitation or not?
NIT is not even basketball.
Okay,
is
so
it?
You're out of the NIT. Isn't there like another tournament too, the CIIT or CBI?
Stop. I'm long in the tournament. No,
okay,
NIT.
We are going to... you have
no
to...
ABCs.
Where in Ohio do you live? Northern, southern?
Columbus, Ohio. I'm going to go find Jeff.
You're in C-Town, okay.
Buckeye all the way, Paul.
Yeah, you might have to drive over to Akron for a play-in game. We got one at the Firestone plant up there.
Hey, we play big ball here at Nationwide Arena. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you just fired your coach yesterday. I know all about it.
Women's basketball is killing here, though.
Okay, well,
now
we'll
I tell my
you, we'll put you in the. Well, we don't have a women's tournament, but everybody is eligible for our tournament. Okay, Elliot. Listen, the field's not being determined for a couple more weeks, so don't let today's setback hurt your feelings.
No, I'm bringing my A game, Paul. I'm bringing my A game.
Elliot, one last question: If you had to meet anyone in the opening round, you could determine it. Who would it be?
Who could I take out in the opening round?
Yeah, who do you feel like you can handle?
Who does everybody want to handle? I'm in every day of the week, Paul. I'll take I'm in down.
Okay, I like that. You're not running. You're not running. I like that.
I'm not running. I'm going up against it, Paul. Buckeyes are taking it this year. Killing it.
I noticed how you avoided anybody from Missouri because you probably still have that beat down in your head.
Yeah, we won't even. Did you see our guy on the bike during that game? He didn't even care. He's like, I think I'll go ride a bike.
Yeah, I told you my story on the game, Elliot, or maybe I didn't, but I was on a plane to L.A. that night, and I had to sit behind two disgusting Michigan fans who were getting drunk and cheering for Missouri the whole way.
Oh, no.
And by the way, I didn't mind them cheering for Missouri, which I was too, but I minded all the noise. It was like midnight, and I was hoping maybe to catch a Z. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And Skipper is up next.
Thank you, Paul, for taking my call.
Aye, Skipper.
I'm a Georgia fan, started watching football in 1946, and you have very good reporters on that, are very intelligent, and then you bring on Mike Griffith. He is not a representative of Georgia. I just wish it wasn't on that. Every time he's on that, I get upset. And then I remember about 4 weeks ago, you had a guy on there from Alabama named Jim that really got upset. I can understand why. In my opinion, Mike Griffith is not – he's just ludicrous, and he just beats around the bush and goes on and on and on. That's all I got to say about that.
By the way, the entertainer Ludicrous just sent me a note. He was offended by being compared by Griffith being compared to Ludicrous. We take a break. More to come. It is a wild Friday afternoon here on the program.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We're back Friday afternoon. Everybody feeling good, middle of the month, and John is next in St. Louis.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, John.
Paul, the name and the town that you are from.
The name of the town is, I feel like I've got to get my password to get back on American Online. It is Memphis, that's where I was born. Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, that's good. Anyway, Paul, yes, I'm on long distance this afternoon, and I was going to talk about a little different kind of a slant this afternoon since it's a Friday, but I was curious, Paul, as to what events or people in your life, besides the obvious, you know, your parents and role models, had really a major effect on your life and kind of what those were, and then I'll tell you about mine.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know you said the obvious, but I can't really answer the question without stating the obvious. And my father had a profound effect on me, and he still does, even though I lost him at 15 years old, and then my mother became my mother and father. So those two really shaped the beginning of my life, and since then, the most important person in my life has been my wife.
Well, that's good. That's a good story to tell, Paul. I was going to tell you, this is something you're probably not going to want to hear, but I'm just going to kind of bring it up this afternoon and kind of let's stir it up a little bit here, okay?
That's what you're here for, John. That's why we pay you.
Anyway, Paul, I was going to talk about going back here when I was a young man, and I used to study a lot of American history, and some people that had a big effect on my life were back in the late 50s and early 60s, and I remember doing a lot of research and
Joseph
study
McCarthy.
On, remember the Hess case, Paul?
Yeah, Alger Hess.
Alger Hess, and there was an individual who was turned out to be a great American that people really looked down upon, Paul. His name was Whitaker Chambers.
Yes.
Remember Whitaker?
I do. I'm familiar with the story.
What's that?
I said I am familiar with the story. Are you now, or have you ever been a communist?
Well, Paul, that's what I'm saying, is that his actions really prevented a lot of destructions of the country and a lot of embarrassment to the country at a time where we were really becoming involved with Eastern Europe in a Cold War state.
Yes.
And I believe that, you know, a lot of people discounted his impact, and I think he did a lot of good. Do you have any opinion about that, or?
Well, listen, I don't. I mean, I studied that case, the Alger Hiss case, who was convicted of what, something, espionage. But I found that to be a very troubling period of American history when people's lives were ruined by baseless allegations by people like Joseph McCarthy and many others.
Well, who could those other people be?
Well, there are a lot of people, a lot of actors, a lot of people in Hollywood, a lot of people in entertainment who were literally ruined because of false and baseless allegations.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then, Paul, can we segue
very
another issue?
What was that?
Can we segue to another topic?
I wish we would, yes.
Yeah, let's segue here. Let's lighten things up a little bit here. And I know
By the way, you never told me.
So
those are the two. Those are the people that influenced your life: Alger Hiss and Whitaker Chambers.
Partially, Paul.
Oh, okay.
anyway, I want to talk a little bit about...
John, you know, have you ever been accused of something that wasn't true? Is that the genesis of all this?
Well, Paul, I have been accused of some things over the years, and I was
good.
It kind of segues into another topic I was going to talk about tonight, and I know your callers. Oh, you guys kind of laugh about kind of the cliches I use, like I talk about the young man and wake up and smell the coffee, but actually. A lot of the cliches I pick up, like young man and sir and over and out, those actually have come recently from the job I've had the last 7 or 8 years at the Juvenile Delinquent Center.
Okay. Well, first of all, that's I'm really glad to know you're working there. I think that's a very worthwhile thing to do, to work at the Juvenile Delinquent Center.
Yeah, and then the other one, I can tell you when I was sued, I'm not going to tell you what happened. I was sued a number of years ago, and the lawyer that had to go to court about kept using the cliche, wake up and smell the coffee.
Right.
So that's where I picked up on that one.
Wow.
So
you've been falsely accused of something, or were you correctly accused of
something?
Yeah,
I was, and I actually won some money out of that deal.
Good.
So I made a good little nice
profit on
that.
I've been sued a few times.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not important, you're not going to get sued.
Yeah.
So, any point, Paul, it's kind of, I guess this turned out to be
John,
a boring call.
John, thank you, and good night.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.